702.
Bruce is on the Money Show.
The Luxury of Conversation brought to you by the superlative Lexus LS500. Experience amazing on 702 and Cape Talk. And Clem Sunter, scenario planner, author of Thinking the Future, New Perspectives from the Shoulders of Giants. We've spoken to him about that recently. Clem, in a previous life, you were once an opening act for the Rolling Stones, if memory serves. You studied at Oxford. You ran the biggest gold company in the world. For those of you, those who haven't heard your Rolling Stones stories, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it was 1964, and the Stones played at Magdalen College at Oxford, and they were still a relatively new band, and we were an Oxford rock group at the time, and so we shared the same gig with the Stones at Magdalen College. And it was really interesting watching them because, you know, they hadn't become that famous by then. And they strutted the stuff.
did you share some chords? Did you? Because you play, you're a guitar player. You you played your guitar for us.
Yeah. Well, I still play the guitar actually, and we played the kind of Simon and Garfunkel stuff, and it was quite interesting. Keith Richards listened to a bit of what we did, and he said, if you do it this way, you'll get a bit more edge on it. So it was a nice piece of advice that he gave us.
You then went on to a long and prestigious career in mining, and you worked for the Anglo-American Group, and for a while you ran the biggest gold company in the world. That is today known, doesn't have any operations left in South Africa, sadly, because the gold is finished and too deep and too difficult to get to and expensive to get to, and amongst other reasons. But you ran Anglo Gold Ashanti.
Well, yeah, it's today. It was the gold division of Anglo-American at the time. And yeah, we at our sort of peak in 1980, we produced 8 million ounces of gold in that year. If you remember, the gold price peaked in that year at about $621 averaged for the year. And so we made $5 billion as the division in 1980. Our costs, our total costs were $1 billion. So, you know, we netted around about $4 billion. And I can tell you at the time that made us the largest business operation in the world.
Largest business operation in the world?
Yeah, gold operation. IBM.
Okay.
Yeah, no, gold. If you actually look at what IBM was earning at the time, I don't think it was close to that. You know, we had this one magnificent year in 1980. When the gold price peaked at this very high level of 621 for the year.
Astonishing. I mean, we go back to those days. I mean, were they good days? Was there a young man called Cyril Ramaphosa making your life difficult at the time?
Oh, yeah. No, I got to know him in the 90s. In 1980, I was just an assistant to one of the managing directors. But obviously, in 1990, I got to know him very well because he was head of the NUM. And he was a great person to negotiate with because he always kept to the deal. And he was tough on many occasions. But we got to know each other quite well, and we even went fishing together. and he was a very good trout fisherman.
He's got bigger fish to fry nowadays, of course, as we know. You don't strike me as somebody who lives in the lap of luxury with Gucci loafers and expensive baubles. Or is there a part of you that is likes the world of luxury?
To be quite honest, it's never been my particular area. I just like leading an ordinary life. And to be quite honest, what is a luxury now? Luxury is work. You know, it's just nice that I'm still, being asked to do lectures on the future and help companies look at their futures. And for me, you know, it's one of those weird things that happen to you as you get older, because when you're young, luxury implies, going to wonderful hotels and having magnificent vacations. But as you get older, funnily enough, the whole thing reverses. And what a real luxury is being asked to help other people improve their businesses.
No, absolutely. And perhaps, I mean, our biggest luxury and the one that we neglect most when we're younger is time. And a friend of mine, he used to be a friend of mine, he's not a friend anymore, because he sent me a WhatsApp on a Saturday morning that said, "Don't waste today. You've got fewer Saturdays left than you've had." And I just like looked at this and thought, I thought you cared. But he does, deeply. A very nice man called Richard Wright. And he just said, "Yeah, don't waste it. Don't mess it up." And perhaps time is our biggest luxury. It's the one that we ignore and we neglect the most. And we don't appreciate the value of it, especially when we're younger.
Bruce, you're absolutely right. And in fact, in Thinking the Future, the latest book I've done with Mitch Ilbery, we absolutely say that when you start a new business, one of the rules of the game is it's quite difficult to raise money for the first time. But just remember that it's more about you making a decision that you're going to invest your time in making sure that business is a success. And that is more valuable than the money that you're raising to start it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, time flies and it really goes. It goes by more and more quickly each and every single year, as I'm sure you will attest to. Has there ever been a time, though, when you've been, I wouldn't want to say a victim, but I mean, you've driven the fancy cars when you were the chief executive and chairman of the gold division at Anglo American? Were you flashy then? Surely there was pressure from the mighty Anglos in those days to look the part.
Really, Bruce, you know, I had a nice car. I had a BMW, nice BMW, 5 Series BMW. It was a nice car. What do I drive now? A Honda Jazz. one does go through that period of life when you like sort of flaunting your success a bit. But it's never been really part of my life. And I mean, like, for example, you know, I don't drink fancy whiskies or anything like that. The only time I really had a fancy sort of drink was I did a talk to the Cape Winemakers Guild, and it was at Spear Estate. And I sat at the same table as the winemaker who made Canon Kop. And he had quite a few bottles under the table. And thank heavens I was staying in the hotel next to the car park, because that was seriously good wine. So, yes, occasionally I indulge in luxury.
Absolutely, but it's on somebody else's ticket. It always tastes so much better somehow. So luxury to you then is time. Luxury to you then is to still be called upon, to still be trusted, and I dare say revered. I'm certainly in some circles revered, and to be called upon to contribute. And a lot of people, when they retire from formal work, don't have that privilege. They're sort of, I think, a lot of the time feel quite cast aside.
Yeah, I feel quite strongly. And some people genuinely enjoy life, traveling around the world, having new experiences. And yeah, the last 2 years have been tragic from that point of view because of the pandemic. And in fact, many of us have had, you know, an excessive amount of spare time in our own homes. But you know, I try and get out and do a few walks and get to see areas that I haven't seen. But it is fantastic to still be able to work. And I think that the people don't retire these days. They find some calling after they retire, whether it's paid for or not, which keeps them, you know, keeps them alive.
I suppose one of the biggest luxuries is having meaning in your life. And for many people who have either not invested enough, saved enough during their lifetimes, who are worried about the future, sort of hunker down and wait for it all to pass, which is a tragic waste of you know, what should really be a very satisfying and gratifying period.
I mean, the future is you know, uncertain. It's, and that's why I just love, you know, handling this particular aspect of my life, which is, you know, what is the future going to look like in 5 to 10 years' time? And right now, there are just so many uncertainties. And one of the biggest uncertainties, Bruce, which I've talked at length about, is this COP26 meeting, which is coming up in Glasgow in early November, because, you know, that is about the future of our planet, which is probably the biggest future of all. And I don't know whether those politicians are going to get serious about curbing carbon emissions, or whether it's just going to be a, you know, a sort of a kind of feast of politics.
And, I think we know the answer. We know the answer to that already. And I mean, and so that future is one that is pretty clear. You have politicians who don't want to be the ones that have to deliver the bad news of constraint and cutbacks and high taxes on gas guzzlers and on other emissions industries. So they don't want to have to do it. So they defer it to somebody else and kick the can down the road. At some point, though, there has to be a rebellion against that of some description, whether it be young people saying this far and no further, and finally using the might of their votes in order to really force change. Because if we don't do it, we're heading to a future that none of us wants.
Absolutely. And we have the scenario in the book, which we call Pandemonium, where you have so many climate refugees in the world that, you know, what's going on the Mexican border at the moment is just, you know, something very, very minor. And so, you know, that's the negative scenario. The positive one is where China and America get together, which I have to say at the moment is very unlikely, and work as a team to, you know, impose kind of measurable targets on all countries around the world. In terms of reducing their emissions. That is, I mean, it's going to take a lot, and it may take a lot more extreme weather over the next few years to get to that point. So, you know, that's why the future is so interesting at the moment, because it's about the biggest thing of all, which is our planet, which has never, ever in the past been a problem for mankind. But now we've got 8 billion people in the world. We've got, you know, lots of people wanting, you know, better life materially. And we've got to find ways of delivering it without ruining our planet. And you know what? The biggest plus of this pandemic has been the vaccines, because nobody would have thought that we could have produced those vaccines so fast that have really, you know, created a much better situation than a year ago. And so I'm just hoping that technology will come to our rescue and people will come up with incredible ways of, you know, providing energy, which are relatively cheap, because that's the most important thing. You can't have very expensive new technologies which are relatively cheap and which can replace fossil fuel and oil and gas.
My thanks to Clem Sunter, as always, on The Money Show this evening. Clem Sunter nowadays is a futurist, and Clem is the author with Mitch Ilbury of a brand new book all about the future, of course, called Thinking the Future, New Perspectives from the Shoulders of Giants. If you want a luxury, there's one for you. The other luxury we're talking about is the Lexus LS500. It's got a whisper quiet engine, noise cancelling doors, which afford you the luxury of great conversations uninterrupted. In the Lexus LS500, the noise takes a back seat to the conversations that matter to you. The new Lexus LS500 range is here, transcending luxury and aspiration. Lexus, experience amazing. And I had the privilege today of driving around for hours with a film crew. And these guys were filming me driving, in some cases very responsibly, and occasionally they got a proper driver in and they tested the car quite aggressively, I must tell you, and it performed very well. That video will be up in the next couple of days. I'll tell you more about that as and when we get it all processed.